Today on The Girl Defined Show, we're talking about transgenderism, homosexuality, abortion, and what your body and all of those things have in common. What's up, sisterhood? It's Bethany here, and I am kind of freaking out because I am so excited that I had the opportunity to interview Professor Piercy. You're going to learn a lot about her as we get into this, but Professor Nancy Piercy is someone who I admire and respect so much. I have heard many of her interviews. I've read her book, Love Thy Body, but I never thought I would actually get the chance to chat with her. So she is such a great, godly woman who has done a ton of research and has done all the work to unpack these huge issues of homosexuality, transgenderism, abortion, hookup culture, things that are like in our culture, in our faces right now, whether it's something you're dealing with or someone you know that's dealing with one of those things, or just curiosity of how to approach and talk about these things in a biblical way. She is going to give us just incredible help and hope and direction with these topics. So you're going to want to share this with your friends for sure. This is, you know, a conversation that many of us can feel scared to have, intimidated to have, almost like this is off limits to have in many ways, but it's not. And the Bible has answers, and God's design for our lives brings so much clarity. Before we jump into that conversation, though, I just want to make sure that you are coming or planning to come to the 2021 Girl Defined Conference. So if you are coming or planning to come, that's the same thing. If you are not registered yet, there's still a little bit of time. So you are going to want to go to girldefined.com/conference and make sure that you are either registered for the online simulcast live stream or the in-person event in San Antonio, Texas on July 30th and 31st. Both on the simulcast, obviously, and in person are happening at the same time. But the reason I want to encourage you to come is because it's issues like this that we're talking about in the podcast today. It's issues like anxiety, worry. It's things like sexuality. It's things like race. It's things like just identity and purpose and courage that comes from Christ that we as young women and women need to know where, you know, who our God is. We need to know him personally. We need to know who has designed us, who has created us, who has made us as women, as females, that is uniquely different from men. We need to know how we can live that out to honor and glorify God with our unique design and with our unique lives, really. And so if you want to learn more about your identity in Christ, if you want to learn how to be bold and courageous and to shine bright, not for your own glory, but to point others to Christ through his strength within you, then I encourage you to go to girldefined.com/conference, girldefined.com/conference to grab your tickets today. Now, a little bit of a personal note, when Professor Piercy and I went to record this podcast, we had like a billion technical issues. And I was literally, after like 20 minutes, I was like, I don't even know if we're going to get to record this. This is such a bummer. I'm so disappointed, because I was looking forward to the conversation. And so we just had a ton of issues at first getting her audio to work. And then after her audio started working, it was just super glitchy for some reason. And so we just prayed beforehand and we were like, God, please just let it at least work. So we did the best we could to make the audio as great as possible. But towards the end, it started to get a little bit glitchy. But, you know, this was such an important conversation and the opportunity to get to talk to her again wouldn't have been for a little while. So I, you know, hopefully one day we can have another conversation and go more in depth, but this conversation is so crucial that I was like, you know, even if the audio is a little glitchy, we have to get this to you because it is absolutely necessary. And if you are like, okay, I really liked that, but I need more, you can grab her book, Love Thy Body. It's on, you know, you can get on audio too. I listened to it on audio and read it actually. Super easy to listen to. It's just amazing. Like, I think it should be required reading. Like, seriously, I think all young Christian women should read Love Thy Body. So we're going to jump into that conversation, but just please have some grace as you listen to the audio, knowing that we are aware. And I'm so grateful that it even recorded because it was literally like a small nightmare. So thank you for your grace and patience. And if you like the content, you're like, wow, this is some good content and I want more of this on the Girl Defined Show, make sure you leave a 5-star review. Like, seriously, pause it, go right now, do it right now. Just click that 5-star button and even write up a review so that we know why you like the show, what you like about it, and so we can make it even more tailored for you. All right, let's jump into the conversation with Professor Nancy Piercy. Thank you, Nancy, so much for being here. I am honored, and I know our sisterhood over at Girl Defined is honored as well, just to get to hear your wisdom. But for those who haven't heard of you or don't know you, can you just give us a quick introduction?
Yeah, so I'm a professor of cultural apologetics at Houston Baptist University. And that means I get to teach young people arguments for God's existence all day long.
Which wow. I mean,
can you think of a better job? I can't.
Yes.
I love it. I get to, like I said, I get to teach people and write books and speak podcasts and conferences. All I ever talk about is, you know, why the Christian worldview is true, how it is, superior to any non-Christian worldview, and how it gives us a better roadmap to life. I was just telling a student the other day, it's not true because it gives you a better roadmap. It gives you a better roadmap because it's true. Mm. Because if something is really true, it will, in fact, work out better in real life. It will fit reality. That's what we want to convey, is that Christianity actually fits reality. And I'll give you an illustration that I gave that student. There was a book a couple years ago called Why America Needs Religion. It was written by a non-Christian. And you say, what? What's that about? And the interesting thing, his name was Gunter Lewy, L-E-W-Y. Interesting thing is, he started out to write a book on why you don't need religion to have a good life, to have a moral compass, you know, to have a sense of purpose and so on. He started out, he called himself a secular humanist, and he started out to write a book on why you don't need God to be good and to have a good life. But when he read the literature, the literature from psychology today is overwhelmingly in favor of showing that if you are a committed Christian, you have better mental health, less depression, less anxiety, better relationships between parents and children, and you even have better physical health. This was a real shocker. But if you're not having depression, anxiety, and you're less likely to have alcoholism, drug addictions, and so on, they found that Christians actually live longer. They have lower mortality rates. So anyway, this secular humanist, as he defined himself, turned 180 degrees around. And instead of writing a book on how we don't need religion, he actually wrote a book called Why America Needs Religion.
So that's, no way.
Just to give you a little sense of the kind of stuff I get to do every single day. I think it's the perfect job.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and everything that you're saying and describing, I'm like, that's the Girl Defined Sisterhood. Those are all the things they're thinking about and wondering. I wish we could all be students in your classes. So this is our chance to be a student just for a few, you know, maybe an hour or so. That's just amazing. Now, the books that I have several of your books, but the one that I really want to hone in and talk about today is your book, Love Thy Body, which I strongly recommend everyone to read. I think it should be a required reading for every one of our listeners. But that, you know, is kind of the direction we're going to take today. You are a wealth of information. And, you know, I wish we could have 10 podcast recordings with you because you're just amazing. But can you tell us a little bit about this book, Love Thy Body, and why you chose to write it?
Yeah, I wanted to equip Christians to answer some of the cutting edge moral issues of our day. You know, most of my books have been about how we can show that Christianity is true. But people aren't asking anymore, is Christianity true? They're asking, why are Christians such bigots? The conversation has shifted. And so I felt like I had to write a book on what you might call moral apologetics. In other words, how do we show Christianity is true in regard to these cutting edge moral issues like abortion, euthanasia, homosexuality, transgenderism, the hookup culture. Those are the five areas, in fact, that I deal with. And so I wanted to give Christians better tools to answer the secular challenges of our day on these moral issues, and to show that it's actually Christianity. We can turn the tables. It's actually Christianity that has a higher view of the body and sexuality than the secular view does. And it's time for us to go on the offensive, in a sense, you know, in a positive way, showing that Christianity has much better answers than than anything on offer in the secular world.
Yeah. And I know everyone's thinking like, okay, well, prove it. What does that mean? And we're going to get into that. That's the entire purpose of this episode. But really quickly, can you clarify? Because you named several different, you know, homosexuality, abortion, transgenderism, hookup culture. There are so many different things that you mention in your book and that you just mentioned personally. And it kind of seems like, okay, this is such a different, diverse set of issues, but somehow they come together in your book. Can you explain how that is?
Yes, I know. That was one of the most interesting and surprising aspects of my book, Love Thy Body. You know, I'd like to jump in with an example because it's easier to see with something very concrete. And let's take the cutting edge issue of our day, which is transgenderism. Mm-hmm. It is the transgender movement is growing in leaps and bounds. So how do Christians respond to it? We respond to it by showing that the secular view actually has a very negative treatment of the body. Transgender activists themselves argue that their gender identity has nothing to do with your biological sex. That your biological sex, your body, is irrelevant and insignificant and tells you nothing about who you are. A BBC documentary says at the heart of the debate is the idea that your mind can be at war with your body. But that's incredible. Wow. Internal alienation, internal division, that your mind can be at war with your body. And of course, in that war, it's the mind that wins. So as a result, kids down to kindergarten today are being told that their body is not part of their authentic self. There was a news item a couple of weeks ago where a first grade girl came home from school and told her mother that her teacher was telling them that just because you have girl parts doesn't mean you're a girl, and just because you have boy parts doesn't mean you're a boy. So the little girl was saying to her mother, "What am I?" And she literally said, "Please take me to a doctor so we can find out what I am."
Oh my goodness.
The reason this was in the news is because the parents were taking the school to court for emotional distress on the part of their daughter. But that's an illustration of how down to kindergarten, first grade, kids are being taught that your body has nothing to do with who you are. And how should we respond to that as Christians? We should respond by saying, why should anyone accept such an extreme devaluation of the body? The body's made by God. It has incredible dignity and beauty. And even secular people are figuring this out. I recently read an interview with a 14-year-old girl, and she had lived as a trans boy for 3 years.
Wow.
She had transitioned at age 11, and then at age 14 recovered her identity as a girl. And she said, "The turning point came," and this is a direct quote, "The turning point came when, quote, I realized it's not conversion therapy to learn to love your body." And unfortunately, this interview came out after my book was already published, because it would have been a great quote for a book titled Love Your Body. But this interview was on a very secular, liberal website. And so what it shows us is that even secular people are starting to realize the issue here is your view of the body, and that transgenderism denigrates and devalues the body. In fact, secular people are starting to say the transgender movement represents body hatred. You see that term now, body hatred.
Wow.
So my book came out, 3 years ago, but it's really relevant now because
more than ever.
The trans movement has really highlighted that the issue is, do we value the body or not?
Yeah. So when you wrote this, just out of curiosity, when you wrote Love Thy Body, were you anticipating where the culture was going, or was this just a passion of yours and you didn't even realize how extreme things would become?
Oh, that's a very good question, because people often put it this way. They'll say, where do you think we're going next? They'll say, do you think the trans issue is so extreme, you know, is that just going to be the end? That's going to play itself out? No, it's a long-term trend. And that's why, as you mentioned a moment ago, you see the same issue with abortion, euthanasia, homosexuality and so on. Like, let's back up to the homosexuality, yeah, which was the previous, you know, big movement. Homosexuality likewise represents a denigration of the body, because essentially what they're saying is, well, if I talk to my homosexual friends, none of them really denies that on the level of biology, physiology, anatomy, chromosomes, and so on. In other words, on the level of biology, males and females are counterparts to one another. That's how the human sexual and reproductive system is designed. To embrace a same-sex identity, then, is implicitly to contradict that design. It's to say, why should my body inform my identity? Or why should my biological sex as male or female have any say in my moral choices? And so what we have to help people to see is that is a profoundly disrespectful view, yeah, of the body. And again, what we should say to people is, why accept such a demeaning view of the body? And by pitting the mind against the body, again, it leads to sort of internal self-alienation and fragmentation. And so what I do in Love Thy Body, by the way, it's not just arguments like this. I have lots of stories. Yeah. And so I'll give you just one on homosexuality. This is a young woman who lived as a lesbian for many years and today is married to a man. You have to say that.
Yes.
Married to a man and has two children. But she wrote an article in which she said, so what was the turning point for her? She said, I came to trust that God had made me female for a reason. And I decided to honor my body by living in accord with the Creator's design.
Wow.
And after that is when she began to, here's how she put it, to my great surprise, I felt a flicker of heterosexual desire.
Wow.
So that was the turnaround. But look at what turned her around. It was not shame or guilt. It was, I wanted to honor my body and live in accord with the Creator's design. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Love Thy Body, my book, is about. It's about how to change our language. We tend, you know, in the church and the stereotypes about Christians are that we use negative language. It's a sin. It's wrong. It's against the Bible. And something's wrong with you. That's the bottom line in terms of the message people pick up. And so Love Thy Body is all about changing that language and saying the whole point of this is honoring your body, living in harmony with your biological sex, respecting who God made you to be, taking your identity from your body instead of your sexual feelings. Actually, that's another quote. So let me give you that quote.
Yeah.
That's another anecdote. There was a young man named Sean who had been exclusively same-sex attracted from the time he was quite young. And the interesting thing about his story is that he grew up in a gay-affirming family and attended a gay-affirming church. So again, his change was not driven by shame or guilt either. He's now married and to a woman and has three kids.
Wow.
And is an ethics professor, a Christian ethics professor in London. but here's how he explained his turnaround. He said, I stopped taking my identity from my sexual feelings and started taking my identity. He says, I didn't try to change my feelings, you know, because that doesn't usually work.
Yeah.
But I started taking my identity from my body, because your feelings can change, but your body, he said, here's how he put it. I accepted my body as a good gift from God.
Wow.
And then my feelings started to follow suit. And so that's really the worldview question that's at the heart of this debate. Do we live in a cosmos operating by blind material forces, in which case your body has no intrinsic purpose or dignity, and you can do with it whatever you want?
Yeah.
Or do we live in a universe, a cosmos designed by a loving Creator, and therefore our body is a good gift? Creation is good. It has an intrinsic purpose, And the goal is to live in harmony with that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So many good things there. The number one thing that comes to my mind is what I'm often told myself, like especially on social media, direct messages I'll get. And it's typically from people saying, you know, well, if God is loving, then, you know, he would accept and approve of this lifestyle because he wouldn't make me, you know, a girl on the inside and a boy on the outside just to say that's not possible, you know? So what do you say to the person? I know this fits in right with everything you just said, but what do you say to maybe the young woman who's listening, who's saying, well, my body, it is a girl, but on the inside, I'm a boy and a loving God wouldn't do this. So it's okay for me to change my body to reflect the inside. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I hear it all the time. You know, let me answer again with a story because, you know, stories work so well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In Love Thy Body, I tell the story of a young boy named Brandon who had gender dysphoria from a very young age. Before he was even walking, while he was still just crawling, his babysitter said to his mom, he's too good to be a boy, by which she meant he's sweet and mm-hmm. compliant and gentle and the things we normally associate with girls. In preschool, when his parents picked him up, invariably, he was playing with the little girls and not the boys, not the little boys. By elementary school, he was coming to his parents weeping repeatedly and saying, I think the way girls do. I feel the way girls do. God should have made me a girl.
Mm.
This was very hard for him and for his parents. Gender dysphoria is very painful. And that's what we need to keep in mind, you know. It is a very painful disconnect between your body and your mind and your feelings. By age 14, he was scouring the internet for information on sex reassignment surgery. So what did his parents do? First of all, they made sure he knew they loved him just the way he was. Mm. When I was in seminary, I had a friend who was a former homosexual. And he said, when I was young, I liked, you know, music and poetry. And my dad was baffled and kept trying to toughen me up.
Yeah.
Like pushing me into more masculine things like sports. Well, Brandon's parents didn't do that. And a lot of parents of trans kids today are doing that too. So it's important to start with, they did not do that. They made sure that what they told him was, it's perfectly okay to be a sensitive, gentle, relational boy.
Yeah.
It does not mean you're really a girl. So that was really important. He never felt like, you know, he was rejected by his parents. They also took him through things like the Myers-Briggs personality test, where it's clear that a boy can be at either end of the spectrum.
Totally.
You know, from the very mm-hmm. gentle, sensitive type to the, you know, macho, assertive type. And of course, it's possible for girls to be all across the spectrum. They can be the soft, emotional type, or they can be the rational, take charge, get it done type. You know, here's what his parents told him. This was their favorite line. They used it all the time. Brandon's parents kept telling him, it's not you that's wrong. It's the stereotypes that are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you do not need to live your life by cultural stereotypes. They even took him through history.
Wow.
And showed him how concepts of masculinity and femininity have changed over history. And my earlier book, Total Truth, has a chapter on this. And so his parents read, it's chapter 12. Brandon's parents read chapter 12 with him and said, look, you do not have to live according to current stereotypes. They change. They're historically contingent. You find out who God made you and you live that way. And you don't worry about whether it fits the masculine stereotypes. Or if it was a girl, I would say, you know, don't worry if it doesn't fit the feminine stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
The gifts of the spirit, they took them to the gifts of the spirit. They're not divided. Like, okay, here's the gifts of the spirit for men.
Yeah.
And here's the gifts of the spirit for women. No. You know, prophecy and teaching are not masculine, as you and I might expect. And mercy and service are not feminine. It says that the Bible says the spirit divides them out individually as he chooses. you know, individually, not by, you know, sex categories.
Yeah.
So it took Brandon a long time, because this was true gender dysphoria. And he's, what is he now? He's about 25. He's about 25 now. And he has, you know, reconciled himself to his biological sex. He just knows that he's still kind of an outlier, you know, on that Myers-Briggs personality test. He's way over on the emotional gentle side, but he is a boy, and he's accepted that. And he's accepted that most of his friends are going to be girls, and they still are. But he has overcome his gender dysphoria. So that's a long account, but I think we have to see it in, you know, fleshed out in real examples like that, so that we can come to see it is more loving to help somebody accept who God made them in terms of their biology, in terms of their body. Your feelings change and often do. There are lots and lots, growing numbers of detransitioners today. Mm. People who feel like they were misled, people who feel like they, you know, they're detransitioning, like the girl I told you about who was identified as a boy at age 11, and at 14, she detransitioned back to a girl.
Wow.
And there's a Supreme Court case in England. They call their Supreme Court the High Court. So the High Court in England just adjudicated a case where a young woman, she's 23 years old, she's only 23 now, her name is Kira Bell, K-E-I-R-A, Kira Bell. And she went to the largest gender clinic in England, which is called Tavistock. She went to the largest gender clinic and she thought she was a boy. And, you know, without probing any of her mental health issues, you know, like 30 minute visit.
This is
not uncommon. You get a 30-minute visit and the gender clinic says, congratulations, you're really a boy. And and here's where you get testosterone. And she now says, you know, she took this case to court and she said, they did not probe any of my psychological issues. I definitely had psychological issues that needed to be addressed. There was a study done maybe a year ago at Brown University, which found that young girls, and this was specifically girls, and it was specifically girls who, the study was done on girls who had not shown any sign of gender dysphoria when they were young. This is a growing demographic right now, is girls who seem perfectly happy being girls when they were young.
Yeah.
Suddenly, when they were adolescents or teens, for the first time, feeling like I'm really a boy inside. And so this was there's actually a new name for that. They're calling it rapid onset gender dysphoria. Because it's not the traditional gender dysphoria has always started at a young age. So anyway, so this was a study of rapid onset gender dysphoria, which is by far the largest number now. You know, if you look at a graph of cases of girls with gender dysphoria, it's pretty flat. And then suddenly goes into a steep cliff, you know, whew.
Yes.
It skyrockets. And she found, the researcher there, her name is Lisa Littman, found that 63% of rapid onset gender dysphoria girls had 63% had at least one mental or psychological health issue before they felt any sense of gender dysphoria. They had already been diagnosed. So that would include anxiety, depression, self-harm, like cutting, OCD, autism. I think there's one or two more. But autism, by the way, was the most common. There's been a robust correlation between autism and transgenderism, or as it used to be called, transsexualism, for a long time. Nobody's quite sure why. But the point is that these young girls were so distressed that they had already, now, you know, your demographic, you know that teenagers often have some anxiety and depression.
Yes.
But these were girls where it was severe enough that their parents had actually taken them to a psychologist and had it diagnosed before the onset of their gender dysphoria. So the thing to keep in mind is these are very troubled girls. And that's something we need to keep in mind when we talk to them. many of them have other psychological issues going on. Oh, I should tell you the punchline to the story about the British High Court is she won. won the case. This 23-year-old girl took on the Supreme Court equivalent in England, and she won. And now in England, you are not, gender clinics are not allowed to give puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, or surgery to children 16 years or younger.
Wow.
So that's crazy. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
So in England now, and it was one girl, took on the Supreme Court and has now won this ruling. So what, they're far ahead of us now because they now are not allowed. With a court order. You have to have a court order in order to give cross-sex hormones or surgery to kids 16 or younger.
Wow. So it's a lot more difficult, obviously, now.
Yeah, that's their point. Their point is that gender clinics. I had a chance to interview several parents for an article I was writing. That was really an eye-opener to talk to the parents. And very frequently, their stories were things like, my daughter went to a gender clinic, spent 30 minutes, and was told, that's where I got that phrase, congratulations, you're a boy. That was from one of my parents. And she said, they're not looking at whether these kids have any sort of psychological issues.
Yeah.
It's bad. It's just bad healthcare.
I mean,
for starters, it's just, that's very low standard of healthcare. Moral issues aside.
For sure.
It's just bad healthcare practice. Mm-hmm.
So why do you think, Nancy, that so many, genuinely loving parents, just people who they're like, okay, I'm not trying to be extreme, but are just going full, like head on with this whole movement is kind of what I want to call it, where it's just like, yes, this is, especially the extreme of altering your body and making permanent lifelong decisions. Why are, loving parents and even, loving teachers or loving doctors, why are they just so 100% on board with this whole movement?
Because medicine has been politicized. Mm-hmm. Medical people are becoming activists. And many parents are afraid.
Yeah.
The parents I talked to had no idea going into it. They had, I feel especially badly for parents who are not Christians because they have no alternative perspective. A Christian at least has some alternative perspective to look at a cultural message and say, is this true or isn't it? And so Christians do have a bit of a protection that way. Many of the parents I talked to for this article, they weren't Christian.
Mm.
So they knew nothing except what the culture was telling them. And they would do what they thought was the right thing to do. They'd take their kid to a gender clinic.
Yeah.
And gender clinics are incredibly politicized on this issue. Remember, it's being phrased as, the current human rights issue is. The current human rights issues used to be homosexuality. Now the human rights issue is transgenderism. And so it's to be against the transgender agenda is to be a transphobe, just like, if you disagreed with the homosexual agenda, you are a homophobe.
Yeah.
And so, if you don't have any alternative sense of truth, an alternative source of ideas, you just have no barriers against just absorbing it. So parents would go to their gender clinic, and the gender clinic would tell them, you have to accept whatever your child is saying. All of the parents I talked to thought the gender clinic would be on their side. They thought the gender clinicians would say, well, slow down. Have you thought this through? Have you considered that your feelings might change? That your hormones change through the teen years, and so your feelings can change. As you probably know, sounds like you've researched this some. Most young people do outgrow, so to speak, their gender dysphoria. when, especially during puberty, you know, when your hormones change, depending on the study, 80 to 95% of people, wow, young people with gender dysphoria do come to feel at ease again with their biological sex.
It's amazing.
So we're, you know, so that's the other irony here is we're giving you harmful, toxic chemicals to young people and cutting off parts of their bodies.
Yes.
When in many cases it's not necessary.
Yeah.
That if you leave them alone and let them go through puberty, they will in fact, 80 to 90% will in fact come to accept their biological sex.
Mm-hmm. That's such a great point. You know, it makes me think of just that segment on the little kids show, Blue's Clues, and they had the drag queen, you know, out there singing about all the different things you could be. And I grew up watching Blue's Clues. And so I was thinking back, you know, like, wow, how different would it be if I grew up, or at least I were a teen right now, and I was just hearing over and over again, almost how it's the better option. And you are even more celebrated if you can be anything other than just who you are right now. So the pressure seems really intense. But I love that you brought out like how being a Christian, you have hope, and there's another option where if you don't, you're not a Christian and you don't have that other hope, it's like, well, I guess this is the best option. I think a way to help our listeners better understand that is to kind of if you could unpack the concept, the personhood theory, where there's that split between the person and the body. I found that very fascinating and very helpful to better understand, you know, why that split isn't helpful. Could you unpack that for our listeners and just explain that for those who haven't heard of personhood theory and what that is?
Yeah, in a sense, that's what we have been talking about when we say the transgender activists say your identity has nothing to do with your body. They're implying that there's some kind of split between your body and your gender identity, and your gender identity is completely separate. And the same with homosexuality, but it really took root first in the secular world with abortion.
Mm.
The same split between the body and the person is presumed by secular bioethicists. So, you know, this hasn't all filtered down necessarily to ordinary people, but if you read the professional bioethicists, for a long time they've been saying, well, yeah, the fetus is human from the moment of conception. The science, DNA and genetics is just too strong to deny it.
Yeah.
So you do not find any secular bioethicist who deny that life begins at conception. And then you say, in that case, how do they accept abortion?
Yeah.
And the answer is they'll say, well, biologically, the fetus is human, but it doesn't become a person until sometime later. And a person is usually defined by mental abilities, by, you know, by what's in your head. You see, it's just like transgenderism because you're defined by what's in your head, not your body. Mm. You see, there's the parallel. But what they say about abortion is you could be human up till some point of development, and then suddenly you jump into this other category called personhood based on self-awareness, cognitive ability, and so on. Of course, the problem is if being a person is completely separate from biology, then how do you define it?
Yes.
You know, is it, you know, what level of development do you have to have?
Yes.
Which cognitive abilities do you have to develop, and how developed do they have to be? And so what you find is that among secular bioethicists, they all disagree. They all draw the line at a different place.
Wow.
So some will say, oh, yeah, it becomes a person sometime before birth. Some will say, no, it doesn't become a person until after birth. In fact, some very famous people have said this, the Crick and Watson, Francis Crick and James Watson. They were the discoverers of the double helix structure of DNA. And they've both come out saying we need to give parents 3 days to run their child through a series of genetic testing. And only then do we call it a person. The rationale being that some birth defects don't show up until after birth.
Wow.
And then Peter Singer, again, a very high-level person, he's a bioethicist at Princeton University, has said, well, even at 3 years of age, personhood is a gray area because how much cognitive functioning does a toddler have? So that's where we are now. By separating biology from personhood, bioethicists now say, well, sure, you're human, but you don't have the rights and and moral status of a person until sometime later. And of course, what that means is none of us have human rights anymore. You being human is no longer enough for human rights. You don't get human rights until somebody, some expert, has decided that you have the requisite cognitive functioning. You know, you have to earn the right. The idea of human rights is it's not something you have to earn. You have it just because you're a member of the human race.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But now you have to earn human rights by achieving a certain level of cognitive functioning. So that's the split. I mean, obviously, if you're human at one, if the fetus is human at one stage, but not a person until sometime later, then clearly those are two separate things. And so that's where that split you talked about first had a serious impact on American life is with abortion, because the Supreme Court itself in Roe v. Wade basically said, you know, it adopted that reasoning. It said you're human at one point, but you're not a person until sometime later.
Mm-hmm.
So it has tremendous impact. And like that's why I titled my book "Love Thy Body."
Yeah,
it's being human, is having a human body, having a human biology. That is really but what the secular world is attacking today. I have had some people have a hard time with this because, in fact, I'll tell you, there was even a Christian philosopher who did a review of my book, and he said, oh, no, we live in a materialist age where a lot of people, you know, don't believe that there's anything but the physical material universe. Mm-hmm. And so they actually have a higher view of the body and of human life because, you know, the body's all that exists. They don't believe in a spirit or soul or whatever.
Yeah.
And my response was, well, you can think the body is all that exists and still have a low view of it and still think it doesn't have any value or dignity and doesn't contribute to who you are as a person. In fact, let me give you another quote. What should I call her? She's a well-known public intellectual and she's a lesbian. And she's a bit of an iconoclastic lesbian because she doesn't believe sex is a social construction, which is what a lot of feminists would say. She says, no, you know, nature made us male and female. Humans are a sexually reproducing species. And so then you say, in that case, how do you defend being a lesbian? And she said, well, yeah, nature made us male and female, but why not defy nature? That was her word. And then she went on to say, fate, not God, has given us this flesh. We have absolute claim to our bodies and may do with them as we see fit. So that is really the logic behind the homosexual movement. They're basically saying our bodies are part of nature, but nature is a product of mindless, purposeless forces, and therefore it has no intrinsic purpose that we are morally obligated to respect, right? Even if nature made us this way, we can do with it whatever we want. And what we need to do to counter that as Christians is to say, no, in the Christian worldview, nature exhibits a design, a plan, an order, a purpose. And when we live in harmony with that purpose, we will be healthier and happier. And this is not just a religious statement. Science itself shows that nature exhibits a purpose. You know, the eyes are made for seeing, clearly. Yeah. And ears are for hearing. Fins are for swimming. And wings are for flying.
Yeah.
The development of the entire organism is driven by an internal blueprint or plan. That's DNA. So science itself shows that we are designed for a purpose. And so all Christians are saying is that when we live in harmony with that purpose, we are going to be happier, we are going to be healthier, we're going to have an internal harmony because we're living in harmony with, you know, who even science tells us that this is who we are.
It's amazing. That's so incredibly insightful and interesting. And I know if for the girls that are listening, you might be thinking like, wow, I want to understand this more. And that's exactly why Nancy wrote her book, Love Thy Body, which you can dig into more. But before we go, Nancy, I mean, I could sit here and obviously ask you questions all day. You're just such an amazing woman. And I just have so been fascinated and just enjoying this conversation. But I know that for our listeners, they may be thinking, you know, like maybe one of our listeners is thinking like, wow, well, I'm really struggling right now with exactly what you're saying and what Professor Piercy is talking about. And so what would you say to the Christian girl who's struggling right now with the thought that she may be transgender?
Or homosexual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me answer with one more story.
Absolutely.
I tell the story in Lovely Body of a young woman named Rebecca, not her real name, who grew up in a Christian home, dated guys, and never, ever thought she would be, I mean, just didn't cross her mind that she would have same-sex attraction. But when she went to college, she met, I mean, almost immediately after she arrived on college, she met a woman who was lesbian, and she fell totally, completely. She totally fell for it. She went home to her dorm that night and said, "This is what I want." You know, some people, when they tell their stories, it's many years of questioning and wondering. But that didn't happen. It was immediate. She said, "This is what I want. this is who I am." And it was. And so she struggled with what I would call girl crushes. She struggled with girl crushes for years. And she was a Christian, so she never totally lived it out. But nonetheless, it was a very difficult temptation for many years. And she fell deeply in love once or twice. And then she got married. She got married and she continued having girl crushes. And so she talked about it with her husband.
Wow.
And he said this. He said, "Because God made you a woman, you can be confident that no matter what your feelings are right now, you will ultimately be more fulfilled with a man." And of course, it goes the opposite direction too, he said, "Because I'm a man, whatever my feelings might be, I can be totally confident that I will be ultimately more fulfilled with a woman." Now that made sense. That's logical. Mm-hmm. That's an appeal to the mind.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of the turnaround. It took another couple of years to be, you know, pretty much fully freed. And you know, it's like any temptation. You're not ever fully freed. Just like an alcoholic probably should never take a drink. I mean, they have to be a lot more careful.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
And
Rebecca said, "I still can't watch Orange is the New Black." You know, do you remember Orange is the New Black? It had a lot of lesbian scenes in it.
Yeah.
So she said, you know, I have to be careful. I can't watch lesbian scenes. And there are a lot of movies and commercials now with girls kissing each other, whatever. Anyway, like any sin, she has to be careful. But it's not disrupting her life the way it was. So that was... this was years ago, so I hadn't written my book yet. But what her husband was basically saying to her was the same thing as Love Thy Body. He was saying, because biologically God has made you a woman, you can be confident that ultimately your feelings will line up.
Wow.
You see, what the postmodernist says is, have you ever seen the gender unicorn?
I haven't. No.
Well, it's everywhere now. Look, it's in my book. It's Love Thy Body. So look it up. But it's a little cartoon, and it's being used in schools. It's being used in diversity training. It's used everywhere, and it's basically the point of it is that you know your sexual feelings are in your head. You know, then you have gender identity, you have gender expression, which is now separate from gender identity, and you have physical attraction, and you have emotional attraction. And by the way, you also have biological sex. So the human person has been divided now into five separate things that can all be contradictory, according to the postmodern view. And so none of them have to line up. All can be in contradiction to one another. And your biological sex, well, that's sort of an afterthought. You know, does that really count?
Wow.
And on the website where this was, where the gender unicorn was developed, it actually says point blank, the term biological sex is harmful to trans people. And I've heard it called a hate term.
Wow.
Because if you remind a trans person that they actually have a biological sex, that is now being called a hate term. So here it's once again, you know, the story of Rebecca was saying, it was just another way of saying, God has given you a body.
Yeah.
You know, God loves you. He cares about your body. He cares about who he's made you to be. And as Christians, it's just amazing that we have a higher view of the body than any other worldview out there. And that's what we should be. That's what our message should focus on, is the positive, that it's Christianity that teaches you the value and dignity of, you know, being an embodied person.
Amen. Yes. Amen to that. And I love that that's your perspective and that's what you're sharing, because I think that's what we as women and young women, we need to understand, that God is loving and he has given us so much clarity through our bodies and through his design with the male and the female. And the more that we are anchored in his word and studying his word and in relationship with him, that's going to help clear up a lot of this confusion. Because if we're filling our minds with just media and the messages from the world, it's going to be more confusing and it's going to seem more difficult. And that's why I love that you wrote Love Thy Body, to help navigate all of these issues, but to also help us to understand that we have a loving designer and that his design is good. I want to wrap things up here because I don't want to take up much more of your time. You've been so gracious so far. But Nancy, do you just have a final like exhortation or word of encouragement for our young women and women listening?
Well, I like the fact that you said, you know, we need to get more into God's word. So let me give you a theological final word. Theologically, what we're up against today is not much different from what the early church faced. And we can get encouragement for that. The early church also faced a culture that denigrated the body, the material world, with isms like Gnosticism. You know, if you do Bible study, you probably learn that Gnosticism was one of the isms that the New Testament was written against. And but there were others too, like Manichaeism was big at the time. Augustine was a Manichae. Platonism, you know, from the philosopher Plato. Plato said that the body is the prison house of the soul. So he obviously had a very negative view of the body. And Gnosticism taught that this world was the creation of a low-level deity. They had several levels of gods. And this world was created by a low-level deity, an evil god. And so Christianity in that culture was nothing short of revolutionary, because it said, no, the world was created by the supreme deity, who is a good God. And therefore, this world is intrinsically good. And not only that, I mean, the greatest scandal at the time was the incarnation, because it said the same supreme deity had actually entered into this world and taken on a body. You know, that was just scandalous at the time. So the incarnation is the ultimate affirmation of the dignity of the human body. And when Jesus was executed on a Roman cross, we might say he did escape this physical world, which is what Gnosticism said we should do. It taught that salvation means escaping the world because the world is so evil. But what did he do then? He came back in a physical body to the ancient Greeks. This was not spiritual progress. You know, they literally said, who would want to come back to the realm of the body? And at the end of time, God's not going to scrap the material world as if he made a mistake the first time around. We're not designed just to live as spirits in heaven. He's going to create a new heavens and a new earth. and restore and renew the physical creation. And you and I will live on that physical creation in resurrected bodies. So from the beginning, mm-hmm. the Apostles' Creed has affirmed the resurrection of the body. I have to tell you, I've researched a lot of other religions and philosophies, and there is nothing like this. This is the highest view of the physical body that you will find in any religion or philosophy anywhere. And that's what should motivate us. We should be so excited and so happy and so positive that we have a beautiful, life-giving message that outshines any other message out there. And so we should be motivated by joy and excitement in communicating this message to other people.
That's amazing. That's such a positive to end on and so different than of what we hear out there. So thank you so much, Nancy, just for bringing that, all of your wisdom, but then also that positive perspective, which obviously is the theme of your book title. And I will tell everyone where they can get it after we end our conversation, and I'll put it all in the notes as well. But I just want to say thank you so much. Thank you for your resources that you have created for all of us to take part in and to learn and to grow. They are absolutely necessary for our times today. You know, it's hard. It's hard being a young person. Mm-hmm. It's hard being a teenager, a young woman. It's confusing. And so I'm just mm-hmm. so grateful for you and for this book. And obviously, I wish I could require it as homework for every one of our listeners right now. But thank you for being on here and chatting with me. It's been absolutely amazing. I know it probably felt like that conversation flew by. It did for me. And I wanted to talk more and more and more, but we had to be respectful of Professor Nancy Piercy's time. She is a very busy woman. And she was so gracious to just answer all of our questions and, you know, just be so bold and courageous and talking about things that are so not politically correct and so not like okay to talk about today. That's the kind of woman I want to be. And I'm guessing that's the kind of woman you want to be as well. And that's why it's so important for us to be intentional in going after truth, going after resources like Love Thy Body, going after listening to podcasts like this, being in the Word, so that when we are presented with these huge issues around us, we know how to process them and think about them in a biblical way, according to our designer's way. I really encourage you to grab a copy of Professor Piercy's book, Love Thy Body. I'll link it below. And again, you know, you don't just become a bold woman like Professor Piercy out of nowhere. It takes intentional effort and years of studying God's word, growing in your understanding of his design, building that relationship with him, intentionally pursuing truth. And again, if you are like, I want to be that kind of woman, come to the 2021 Girl Defined Conference on July 30th and 31st, where you can be equipped to grow in becoming a bold and courageous woman. Join online if you're not able to come in person, but go to girldefined.com/conference, girldefined.com/conference. It's an event you're not going to want to miss with the sisterhood to grow and become a courageous woman for Christ. Hopefully we'll see you in July. If not, we'll see you next week on the podcast.